Welcome to Optimal Health for Busy Entrepreneurs, the podcast for busy and high-performing entrepreneurs and leaders who are looking to create more energy and optimize their health while upgrading their brain and personal performance with precision. I am your host, Julian Hayes II. I've been involved with health and performance for over a decade. This podcast was created for the high performer who is unapologetically ambitious, the one who moves at a fast pace and operates with an edge, the one who wants to become superhuman. Nothing here is fluff, gimmicky, or feel good. I have little to no interest in simply helping you improve your life. I want to help transform it. By listening to this podcast, expect to have a body that feels just as good as it looks. Expect to possess a swagger and style that gives off an infectious vibe. Expect to command the stage or any boardroom you walk into with your executive presence. And lastly, expect to become your most enhanced self so you can live a limitless life. Now, let's get to the show. Welcome, everyone, to another episode of Optimal Health for Busy Entrepreneurs. I'm your host, Julian Hayes II, back at it again with a fellow superhuman. This guy is known by many things. At his core is a belief that everything you can imagine is real. He is the oracle of Austin. Some call him a real estate tycoon. He does not believe in chronological age, which is music to my ears. And he is lastly the founder and CEO of Rastegar Property, Ari Rastegar. How's it going, man?
Going great, man. You know, waking up every day and being able to do what you love is a great blessing, and very lucky to be able to do that, especially in my hometown and with the people that I love. So I don't know. I don't know what else I could ask for, being happy, healthy, and full of energy.
Absolutely, man. And before we start at the present and even go to the future, let's go to the past a little bit. And I was reading up a little about you, and it seemed like the moment involving the Iranian Revolution was kind of impactful with your family and everything. So what was
it was a big inflection point. You know, my grandfather was you know, very close with the Shah of Iran. My namesake was a five-star general in the Iranian Revolution, in the Iranian army. And we weren't Muslim. So, you know, when the Ayatollahs took over, they literally killed our whole family. Luckily, my father and uncles and aunt were studying in Texas, in Austin, of all places, with the plans to go back to Iran. You know, my father was in boarding school in London during his kind of middle school, part of his high school, studied in France. And, you know, it was a lot of the kind of wealthier families did in Iran. But then they lost everything. And right around that time that, you know, the revolution broke out, my dad found out that his girlfriend was pregnant, and here I am.
Yeah.
And so we had to start it from scratch. And, you know, it's a plight that a lot of Iranian Americans share as well. You know, so the story that I'm sharing with you, a lot of other Iranians that you'll see, whether in Los Angeles, there's a huge, you know, Iranian community there that share this similar plight and this very similar story. And, yeah. And I just kind of was lucky to have the knowledge of knowing my grandfather very, very well, having an incredible father. You know, my parents divorced when I was really young, but obviously very close to my mom. You know, she remarried, had a couple kids, very close to with my brothers, and, you know, had some great mentors along the way.
Yeah. And I talk with a few friends who have immigrated to America, or their parents have. And I think there's some type of edge that they have in terms of work ethic.
So I was born in Austin. Mm-hmm. So
but even like your parents, though.
Absolutely. Yeah. So first generation American. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Yeah. They have a little hunger, right? Like there's a little extra, the little extra hunger in you, right?
Yeah. I just sense that with friends. And even if they, like you said, they were born in the States, but their parents like give off that mentality. And I think it gives them an edge to a certain extent.
I think you're right. I think you're absolutely right. And you know, it's a double-edged sword, right? You know, it's a lot of cultural kind of pressure to go out there and do something, and but a lot of guidance, and you know, a lot of mentorship, and I was very fortunate to have parents that were voracious readers. And so reading and education and health and wellness was very much in the DNA of our family. You know, like we were, my dad, you know, at one point was a massage therapist. We were taking vitamins. My mom and dad were, you know, vegetarians back in the late 80s, early 90s, when it wasn't cool to be vegetarian. My mom is into homeopathy. You know, so I was very fortunate to be around health and wellness, you know, throughout my life. So it was very much a part of, you know, kind of my DNA of understanding that, which is a blessing.
Yeah, that is a blessing. I didn't have that. So I had to learn the hard way to really kind of reprogram my brain around health and wellness.
I tell people all the time, like, I want to learn. I was like, really, you need to unlearn more than you need to learn.
Exactly. And that goes for a lot of things.
Yeah, the truth is the fundamentals. Whatever you're doing, you gotta unlearn more than you gotta learn. That's for sure.
Yeah. So let's go back to what I look at as day one for you in terms of developing your real estate empire. And that was the $3,000 to get that first property. Yeah. What was your mindset at that point?
Being crazy. I don't know. I just had that itch. You know, I've my grandpa always wanted me to own buildings. He was a medical doctor. My dad's an attorney, and it was my first year of law school. And man, delivered pizzas through college, and had to go to two community colleges before getting into Texas A&M. I was an English major, you know, graduated top of my class, but you know, it was kind of a screw up in high school, and you know, they didn't let me in, and maybe they shouldn't have let me in. But when I got to law school, this is around 2005. I graduated 2004 from Texas A&M, and the markets were going crazy. And I just felt like it was time to jump in. I saw this one man's name on a lot of these buildings. I would drive to school, and it would just be framed going up and say sold and sold and sold and sold. And I sold cars in between college and law school, because I actually graduated in December after doing a study abroad in Mexico for a couple of years, like 18 months. And to save up enough money, and I got a scholarship to go to St. Mary's in San Antonio. And so I'd saved up a little bit of money. To me, it was a lot of money. And I wanted to learn. So I just literally went and knocked on his door. You know, I tell people all the time, old school still works. Pick up the phone. You know, in this era, DM the person that you want to talk to. You know, get on YouTube if you want to learn something. It's free. I mean, it's like, this is the greatest age ever if you want to actually learn, right? And so I just went and showed up in his office and said, look, this is what I got. This is what I want to do, but I want to be on the build site. I want to learn how these houses are built. And these are little $80,000 interim construction loans that, man, I didn't have any credit. I didn't have whatever, but I had a little bit of cash. I said, look, I'll buy the lot and, you know, I'll work every day and you build it at cost and we'll split the profits 50-50. And, you know, he was generous enough to take me up on that. And by my third year of law school, we had amassed a pretty tremendous portfolio for a kid that, you know, was getting $2 tips, you know, from Double Dave's Pizza not too long before. And I was on the build site at 5 a.m., pouring concrete, tying rebar, putting up sheetrock, doing electrical, mechanical, and then rushing to law school in my work boots, studying till 2 a.m, you know, just working my ass off. I mean, like, psychotic, inhumane hours, but I knew that that's what I was supposed to be doing. I had a why, you know. Mm-hmm. I had a why of what that meant. And then 2008 hit. And then all of a sudden, all those loans got pulled. And what we thought was going to be, you know, for myself, a multi-million dollar exit turned out to be zero. But my partner, being the honorable man that he is, and having liquidity and still a friend of mine to this day. And, you know, his kids now are all married and have children. And, you know, we're still relatively, you know, relatively close and in contact. He said, look, you know, you worked really hard. I'm going to give you all your money back that you had in your scholarship money, pay back your, you know, $3,000 investor guy. You'll have good credit. I'll sign on all the debt and I'll wait. And he did wait several years, made a bunch of money. And then here's your hat. Good luck. And so I went to Wall Street and I promised myself that I would figure out how that happened and make sure it would never happen again. I saw how much money people made during that recession, you know, that had the money, that had the acumen. And I was fortunate to work with some of the greatest minds in the real estate business, because my wrestling coach growing up, and I was, you know, was a mediocre at best wrestler. And the guy that was my same weight class at our school, who's still one of my best friends since we were 10 years old, was a 7-time national champion. So I just got beat up every day, really. So, but his cousin, yeah, I say cousin, but his Italian cousin, ran Credit Suisse's entire real estate conduit lending business. And, he kind of vouched for me, you know, kind of Italian style, and, moved me to New York and put me in the room with, you name it, the biggest names you can possibly imagine in real estate. And I helped manage some of their personal portfolios, work directly with them on individual projects, took their kids to school, like whatever I could do to just be around them. Took the bar exam. I'm still a licensed attorney because my dad would kill me if I wasn't, because, you know, that's more important than and after being there on Wall Street for many years, we, you know, got married, and, you know, we had our second child on the way, and Austin's my home, and I kind of saw the writing on the wall. And one of my investors that I got to know really, really well when I was working at one of these shops kind of said to me, you know, why are you working for somebody else? Like, you're doing the numbers, right? I'm like, yeah, you're doing the acquisitions, raising the money. Like, you know, when you grow some balls, you know, come tell me, I'll give you the money and start your own company. And it scared me. And so I went home and told my wife. She was like, well, what are you going to do? Well, you have to quit your job. We have kids. Like, you know, you hurt. Oh, I got, you know, whatever. I went back down and said, all right. So he loaned me the money, paid him back a year later. And the rest is history. And within 6 years, we built a multi-$100 million portfolio. We're building 4,000 houses in Austin. We have 7 development projects breaking. We bought and sold and exited successfully in 38 cities, 12 states, 7 different asset classes. And we'll be in the billions in the next 18 months, and started it from nothing, but good old fashioned, you know, hard work, man. I mean, like excessive hard work, and finding tools of personal development, you know, having a great life coach, always being curious, being a reader, being around great minds, listening, you know, taking my ego out of the equation.
Yeah.
And making sure I'm surrounding myself by believable people. And we've been able to build something really special.
Yeah, that was going to be the thing I was going to say, is also finding a way to get yourself in the room with the right people.
Yeah. And you, a lot of it is luck. And I hate to say that, but, you know.
But it's truthful, though.
But it's really, it's really the truth. I got very lucky in a lot of ways too. I was very blessed to be able to be in those situations with the people that I was. There's so many people that work incredible hours like I have. And, you know, but I got really lucky and really blessed. And, my way of honoring those blessings was to capitalize on it, you know, and I knew it was a blessing. I know the difference at this point in my life between raw hard work got me to X and we achieved it. And then this was providence. Like, I know the difference now. Like, I have the discernment to be able to see, you know, what that was. And so I'm still very much in awe of where we are, because I know that we're blessed to be here. And, you know, people heard someone talking about humility recently, and had a beautiful quote that really resonated with me, was that humility is not thinking less of yourself. It's thinking less about yourself, you know? And so I'm still in awe of the ability to do what I love, you know, and do it every day with the people that I care about, people that I respect, and to build great projects, to be able to have the artist in me, which, you know, I very much have, although I'm a risk manager in my day job, you know, to me, in my heart, I'm an artist. And to be able to design beautiful buildings, figure out how people are going to live and what the future of that looks like, marrying technology and data and analytics into that, being the oldest millennial, which is kind of a funny, you know, kind of thing about me, that I'm actually the oldest millennial, whatever that means. So I'm J. Cole's middle child, right? Like, I'm stuck right in the middle of two generations. Like, I'm the little brother to all the old heads, and I'm the big brother to all the younger guys.
Absolutely.
You know, and so we have a huge list of our investors are mostly public pension funds, family offices, and institutions. But, you know, we have a huge list of celebrities, athletes, NBA players, NFL players, musicians, you name it. And so getting to talk with them and spend time with them, you know, I realize that the fundamentals of getting where you want to go are very, very similar, right? And so much of it has to do with knowing where you're going. And that sounds like something very simple. It's not easy, but it's simple. But you need to know where you're going.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, and that was one of the things that I was very fortunate is that I knew what I wanted. Like I knew what I wanted to build. I didn't know, you know, how I was going to do it, but I knew my what and I knew my why. And I knew what my why wasn't about me. It was about doing something for other people to contribute, about growth and contribution. And I knew the what, which was in real estate and marrying pop culture and creating the next generation of, you know, what living and housing and, you know, will be for millennials and Gen Z as, you know, we watch the baby boomers pass on this wealth to that next generation. And kind of being the plug in between the two of them, and the what, the how of it kind of iterated on its own as we worked.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think I'm about to ask this question. I know the answer in my head, most likely, but for listeners out there who, and I'm sure you get this a lot, how do you work with these high profile clients, these athletes? How did you get in their orbit to start working with them?
You know, I treat them like, look, they're people at the end of the day.
Exactly. Know,
end of the day, and I think congruency and authenticity speaks volumes, you know. And I don't watch sports. I don't even like sports, to be perfectly honest, you know. And I think that's always funny having all these athletes. I watch my boys, like my boys are playing, I'm watching them, you know. Or if the greats are playing, at Braun or Serena or, you know, any of the greats of anything, Tiger, I mean, you name it, whatever, you know. See, you know, I'm watching them, right? I'm not watching sports per se, right? But I'd like to believe that it was authenticity, you know, and just getting connected to them and getting to know them and then realizing I'm just a regular dude in a hoodie, just like them. I don't wear Rolexes or, you know, this is all for my kids, man. I got three beautiful children and, I love what I do. And a lot of them, they love what they do, you know, and the ones that work with us, you know, are really on a mission, whether it's something to better their family, you know, or they're just in love with the game of basketball and that's just what they do and who they are. And those tend to be the artists that are just artists and it just bleeds out of them. Those are the people that we've worked with because we share common core values. And just through the grapevine of being around that those types of people, you get in those rooms and just by being vulnerable and being authentic and just letting it roll, you know, and, that's really what it is. Like, so I didn't go after it at all. I just did me, and a couple of them kind of ended up in the same room and ended up chopping it up about different things. And, you know, and I'm never out selling anything per se. And, you know, they expected me maybe to, they'd read about me or seen what I'd done and just build authentic relationships with great people. And it led into great business.
You know, and that matches with a lot of other people that I've interviewed in the past who now maybe have high profile clients or whatever. It's that they focus on relationships and they focus on getting good at their job. And then that stuff came. So yeah. That's great to hear.
You have to be obsessed with your consumer and you have to care about their needs and put their needs above your own, whether that's Amazon. And that's why they became so successful is because, you know, Bezos was obsessed with his customers. And it was up until only about a year ago that he still once a month got on customer service calls. You didn't know it was Jeff Bezos, but he was sitting on a call for a $14.99 return of, you know, diapers or whatever it is. So he could be on the front lines and build services that were going to make the lives of his customers easier. And that's what made Amazon so successful. And he differentiates between mercenaries and missionaries. There's mercenaries that are after money and missionaries that, you know, are out to do something different. Mercenary businesses, you know, might have a good run, but they don't last the test of time. Jack Welch, who I have a tremendous amount of respect for, rest in peace. He passed away in March of 2020. You know, probably one of the greatest managers, leaders ever, leader or chairman of GE, as you know, maybe your listeners know. If you don't know who Jack Welch is, I highly recommend you read all of his books, get to know who he is, especially if you're an entrepreneur. But he talked about a few things, but one thing that really stuck with me was when you're creating a product, whatever it is, you have to objectively put yourself on the other side of the equation and ask yourself, would I buy this product at this price point? And does this make my life easier? Is this something genuinely that my customer needs versus me selling you something? Like, can we create something that they want to buy because it helps their life in whatever respect? And if the price point that they were entering the market was competitive, it gave deep value to their end user, consumer, and it created some sort of convenience or whatever that was, even if they had a 5,000% markup, but if it was still cheaper and better and the consumer was happy, that's when they knew they had something good. It really stuck with me. And so to any entrepreneur that's out there doing whatever they're doing, you have to take it outside of you. The biggest mistakes that I made, and my book comes out in June called The Gift of Failure. And it's about introspection into those things. And I found, the biggest mistakes I made in my life in business were wanting to be right. And, I wanted to be right. And it wasn't until I was looking for the right answer that things started to change, and listening to those things. And when we're in our investment committees and we're talking about deals or whether or not we're going to invest, we never talk about making money. All we talk about is how we could potentially lose money. Everything is about capital preservation, because that's, ultimately the name of the game. And in our opinion, we're not the home run, swing for the fences kind of folks. We're singles and doubles people. So, being obsessed with our consumers and putting their needs first.
That reminds me, when you just said singles and doubles, I was reading a few articles of yours just from years back, and you had a line in there that said, boring is beautiful.
Yeah.
I love that. And it's something that I think is one of the toughest things probably for this generation now, and I'm speaking of myself as well, is that the toughest challenges is not the access to information now. It's really our focus and our ability to stick with something, I think about.
Yeah, I mean, you nailed it. And, look, I tell people all the time, and you mentioned it, a creed that's on all of our development projects, the Picasso quote, everything you can imagine is real. I live in a world where everything is possible. One of my favorite poets, Persian poets, Rumi, I'll bastardize the quote, but you'll get the point. He said, if there's a candle that's lit and you take another candle and you light another candle, that doesn't take anything from the brilliance of the first candle. So I live in a world of sharing, whatever it is. I can humbly teach anybody that I've learned along the way, which is what the book is, really about. But to find success, you have to be laser focused, and multitasking is bullshit. It spreads you too thin. And you can take that same thing to friendship. If you have 30 friends, as an example, you can only spend so much time with each one of those people. If you have 5 friends, you can devote more time and energy to those 5 friends and build deeper, longer relationships with them. So it's back to the fundamentals, right? And so, for me, it was about rinse and repeat. It was about finding a strategy, finding a thesis, finding a lane that I can own, that I understand, that I'm comfortable with, that's filling a need. And just keep doing the same things. When you go by Rastigar Apartment Buildings, as an example, which is one of our many verticals, we're in industrial, master plan development, you name it. It's the same gray paint, the same finish out, same floorings. We buy it in bulk. It works. We have Ferrari red doors, which is for Ari. My wife thought it would be a funny kind of joke. it's rinse and repeat, and it works. And we have a thesis around it. And we don't try to reinvent the wheel. We just try to keep the wheel balanced and aligned. And you can do everything you want in this world. Truly, I believe that. Just not today.
Yes. Just not today.
Pick one, master it, and then move on to the next one.
Absolutely. And, you know, speaking of that, I want to dive into now health and wellness, because this is a huge part of your life. Huge. And when we first got connected, I would have never thought a guy like you would have like anxiety issues or anything like that.
Oh man.
So let's talk about, let's just dive into that. Let's start with your wellness routine, or I guess let's specifically start with, anxiety and getting a hold of that.
Yeah. I mean, you're running a big business and, you have people's families that are, you know, trusting you to make payroll, making big acquisitions, being stewards of people's capital. You take that seriously. You know, I have no anxiety about me. I know who I am, but the things that keep me up at night is making sure that I can still honor, the promises that I've made, you know, and continue to deliver. And the way that I learned to do that is by investing in myself, making sure that my wellness is right, that I'm in the gym. And they say in airplanes, you know, when the oxygen mask drops, you put it on your face for the person next to you. That's not selfish. That's actually humble, so that you can help more people. And so I invest tremendously, whether in hyperbaric chamber treatments, stem cell treatments. I have a full-time age management doctor that makes pharmaceutical grade vitamins specifically designed for my blood. I'm in a gym 6 days a week. I train with, Jeremy Hill is one of the greatest trainers in the world. He trains all the big professional athletes, because the better I feel, and then through transcendental meditation, through spiritual practices, I can show up better and I can show up with more vibrance and I can contribute more. And so I put a tremendous amount of focus on that, because I'm all I have at the end of the day. Mm-hmm. I'm my asset, and how I treat myself is a reflection of whether you want to call it self-love, self-respect. How you treat yourself is how you treat the world. You know, you find a person that has a lot of pain and all those other things, it's going to resonate. So when it came to anxiety or came to those issues, I realized that I wasn't eating the right foods. And I found that, you know, gluten and dairy and these different things were irritants and were causing problems metabolically. So there were some psychological pieces causing the anxiety, but a lot of anxiety and depression is misdiagnosed as a psychological issue when it's really an eating issue or an exercise issue. You know, going for a jog or, you know, jumping on a trampoline or a rebounder secretes serotonin and lowers that anxiety. Learning how to meditate versus, you know, taking some sort of antidepressant or Xanax or whatever it is, but finding tools and using my life coach, who I've been with for 12 years now, who coaches Hugh Jackman, I mean, Michael Rapinoe, I mean, the list goes on. I mean, her and Tony Robbins are probably the biggest in the world. And finding tools to alleviate those issues in a very constructive way. And it's not easy, man. You know, because you got to look in that mirror and you got to see that things aren't right. And it takes a tremendous amount of vulnerability. And for a guy, you know, you wouldn't like me 10 years ago.
But do you, I hear that a lot with sometimes with entrepreneurs. And I sometimes think, though, but don't you think, though, that a little bit of that personality 10 years ago is also the reason that put you where you are right now? It was kind of beneficial to a certain extent.
Look, I look at it as, you know, there was a point in my life when life was happening to me. Mm-hmm. Life was happening for me. I connected the dots backwards, and that's it got me where it got me. I wouldn't change anything.
Exactly. And so this is, you probably talk to a lot of entrepreneurs, I'm sure. And at the early stages of their business, I guess they're probably more in like a hustle mode, the dip. And sometimes they can use that as an excuse. So from the very start of your entrepreneurial journey, was you always this diligent and meticulous about your health, or was it just evolution?
God, no, I didn't. Absolutely not. Like I understood the value of my health, but in mm-hmm. college, I was eating ramen noodles and macaroni and cheese. We don't have any money. I mean, like, whatever. And now things are much more affordable. You can buy a can of sardines and it's 40 grams of protein for $1.25, and, you know, get a little thing of spinach for $1 and have a perfect meal. Right. And, I wasn't thinking like that in that time. I went to college too, and you know, you're out drinking and being a college kid and doing all that stuff, and you know, your priorities are different. But it wasn't until our first child was born that I realized that I wasn't feeling good, and I was working crazy hours, and I just didn't have the energy to be the dad that I wanted to be or be the husband. I just didn't have it physically, and started to lose my hair, and I had dark circles under my eyes, and I just didn't feel good. And I went on a mission to figure out why, and it was revealed to me what was going on. So I take about 150 vitamins a day that are custom made for my blood. Operated every 60 days. In addition to all the wellness routines and the way that I eat, I take food sensitivity tests, on infrared and near infrared light beds, cryotherapy, stretching, yoga, weightlifting, Pilates. I mean, all, you know, all during different times, obviously, to make sure that, you know, like I said, that I can give my all.
Yeah. And I'm sure it's noticeable with everyone around you.
Yeah, it's infectious, and it's infectious either way. Whatever you do, if it's toxic, it's infectious. If it's constructive, it's infectious when you're a leader or you're the head of an organization. The old saying is the fish stinks from the head down.
And so with entrepreneurs now, what do you think is a good starting point for them when it comes to their health?
They need to be eating a lot more vegetables. Eat more vegetables. Regardless of what your thing is, you need to be eating more leafy green vegetables, period. End of story. You need to be moving your body, you know, move your body every day, whatever that means. Get your heart rate up, even if it's for 5 minutes. Eat way more vegetables than you think you should be. And get started.
Simple, but not always the easiest to follow for a lot of people.
It's not that hard. You walk out of your house and go sprint for 5 minutes. It's cheap, free. You don't need a gym membership. You walk to the grocery store, you know, and spend a couple bucks. And just like I said, I go to Costco and get wild salmon in a can, literally the stack is big. I keep it in my office. It's, you know, $15 for like a bunch of them. And I just open it up and eat it with a fork. Then I'd be fancy.
Yeah.
And trying to make it fancy and say it's expensive. It's not. It's actually cheaper, but nobody's put in the work.
You know, speaking of putting in the work, I might butcher this that you said. I think you said resourcefulness over resources. I might have butchered that a little bit. And besides that one thing, what do you think is some other limiting things that is stopping entrepreneurs from really taking it to the next level with their mindset?
Limiting beliefs. Mm-hmm. Just limiting beliefs that have been unlearning, like we said before, you know, and a lot of times the people that have put those thoughts into our heads are the people closest to us, and not out of because of anything nefarious or bad, like our parents as an example, or grandparents. Grandma wants to give you that pie that she cooked you out of all the love and whatever, but it's terrible for you. Or, you know, mom tells you, no, you can't do that, or we're not going to be able to do this, or we're not going to be able to afford that, or you'll never be able to do that. She's not saying that she doesn't love you and doesn't want you to be whatever, but she doesn't want you to get hurt, you know, and you got to be like Nike. Just do it.
Just do it.
Just do it. And that's how you do it. How do you learn how to ride a bike? Ride a bike. And that's my only advice to investors, to entrepreneurs, investors, whatever it is you have a passion for, just fucking do it. And stop talking about it. Don't talk about it. Do it. Just go do it and start, you know, wherever you are. You know, I flipped burgers when I was in high school. I delivered pizzas through college. I'm sitting on a $1 billion portfolio, you know, over the next 18 months. Like, and I'm not the smartest guy in the world. You know, so it's, if you want it, go get it. Mm-hmm. And if you didn't get it, it means you didn't want it. Ball don't lie. My boy Mike Studd, you know, he started a podcast recently. And he had Johnny Manziel on there. And that was the tagline of the podcast is ball don't lie. Men lie, women lie, numbers don't lie. Ball don't lie. You want to show me what you're doing? You want to talk about it? Let's see the numbers. Ball don't lie. You do the work, results will come. And if you didn't do the work, you ain't gonna have no results.
No, that's a simple truth.
Failures. Ain't no excuses. You failed. But you got to get back up.
You know,
every time.
And it's that type of mentality that's needed. But I feel now that it's kind of.
People are soft, man.
Okay.
You're soft. You're soft. And that's okay. If you want to be, you want to live a mediocre life, that's your business.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the beginning lines of my book are, I hope you fail. The second line is, I hope you fail a lot. That's where you learn. Mike Tyson would say everybody has a plan until they get punched in the face. You know, they're soft, though. They talk about wanting all these things, and they see everybody flexing on Instagram with this, that, and the other, and people are more concerned about looking rich than being rich. You know? And I don't think about making money. People say, hey, what's your net worth? I don't know. I have no idea. How many properties do I have? I don't know. I just do the work. I'm doing the process. I'm shooting the free throws every day. I'm in the gym every day. Shooting free throws. So when it comes game time, I ain't got to get ready. I'm ready.
And if you're constantly doing, which I imagine so, you don't have time to look at competition or what anybody else is doing.
That horse blinders on, man. I'm running my race. You see this in sprinting all the time. Look at Usain Bolt. Is he looking to the left or right?
Absolutely not.
Absolutely not. I'm running my race. I'm running it my way. I'll make my mistakes. They're mine. I don't have competitors. My competitor is me. It's me 5 years ago and me in the future. That's who I'm competing with. I want to be better. Benjamin Franklin said it best. You know, a mantra that I live by. He said, be at peace with your neighbors. Be at war with your vices. And every year find yourself a better man. Or woman, or whatever pronoun you pick. But every year, find yourself a better human being. And that's what I live by, even if it's this much. Because those compounded little returns, stacked up over time, they add up.
1% adds up. I think it's the Kaizen principle or something like that.
Kaizen, constant, never-ending improvements of the day that I die.
Absolutely. And so as we get ready to wrap this up, let's do just a few random questions here. So what does success mean to you?
Success is making sure, you know, Emerson said it best. Success is making sure that, you know, one life breathes easier because you've lived.
And
I can do something that makes people's lives better. I mean, that would be success. You know, that is the essence of success to me.
What does failure mean to you?
Failure means learning.
And where do you see the next 5 years for you?
Straight up.
I like it. And are you a music person?
Obsessed. All genres. All awesome. Eras. All music.
Okay. All right. Let's do this. So who's in your all-time starting five in musical? Musical starting five. It can be groups. Huh?
What genre? It's too hard. Big genre. Pick one.
Okay. What genre do you like the best?
You know, I listen to rap the most, probably.
Okay, we'll do rap.
I love all of it. Like, we have Sinatra playing in the house all the time.
I like Sinatra.
We'll listen to Coltrane. Like, I was a big Dave Matthews fan, big Nirvana fan, Pink Floyd. Like, I run the gambit, but when it comes down to it, you know, the kids are listening to Drake and Abel mostly. So, you know,
that's what you listen to. So we'll do rap then. We'll do rap. So let's do your five.
rapper to ever touch a microphone, hands down. End of story is Lil Wayne.
That's the best.
Yes.
Okay.
Probably M next. Nas is up there. Hove. Five is tough. I'll tell you my favorite that might not be one of the best is Fabulous.
I like Fabulous. I like Fabulous.
I like that, but Wayne is the most prolific rapper to ever touch a microphone. I mean, since he was 11 years old, he's still doing it. And what M did was just silly. I mean, it was just completely, absolutely bonkers, beyond belief. Love J. Cole. Have so much respect for J. Cole. So much respect for Big Sean. There's a lot of great talent out there that are doing good things, that are saying good things. You know, Drake. Love Drake. You know, get a lot of people helping him, which kind of violates the rules that I grew up in. But we love his music. Absolutely. All of us are fans. My 5-year-old, my 8-year-old. We sing all the songs from Pop Star, you name it. You know.
And the next thing is pretend that you have a bottle of wine or a bottle or a bunch of smoothies. If we're just staying healthy that day. And what was that?
Celery juice.
Or celery juice. So we got a bottle of celery juice, and you can invite 3 guests to join you at this round table. And from any point in history,
dead or alive,
it doesn't matter. They can be dead or alive. What 3 people would you invite?
Elon, for sure. I would probably invite, man, that's a good one. You got me actually thinking. There's a lot of people out there. I'd probably bring John Hagelin, who's the head of the Transcendental Meditation Movement, who's a quantum physicist. I'd bring my 8-year-old daughter.
Okay. Interesting. Why 8-year-old daughter?
Because she's my blood. And she's the oldest of my children that gets it.
Mm-hmm.
10 times smarter than me. So I'd want her to soak up all the knowledge and be in that room.
Awesome. That's a first. Normally I exclude friends and family, and I didn't this time. So that's interesting. That's a very interesting answer. And so the last question here is, someone comes up and taps you on the shoulder and they ask, what are 3 things that I can do today to start becoming a superhuman entrepreneur? What would you tell them?
Read. I read 10 to 15 books a week, and I have for 25 years. Read, set goals, and fucking do it.
Simple enough. I love that. That's a great way to bookmark this conversation. Ari, where can listeners keep up with you at?
You can Google me. I mean, you can Google Rastigar. You can Google Ari Rastigar. I'm pretty easy to find. I have a column in Forbes. Pretty public what we've done. You can go to @Rastigar on my Instagram. I'm kind of not really good at social media, but I got a team that kind of does that stuff. But we're pretty easy to find. You just type in my name into Google. You'll see only about 2,000 or 3,000 articles that will tell you what we're doing, and reach out if we can help you.
Yeah, and I will have all that in the show notes, and I look forward to checking out the book when it comes out.
Send you a copy.
All right. So listeners out there, stay awesome, be limitless, and go be superhuman. Peace. Mm-hmm.